We're holding on by the Mishnah on Membeis and Membeis. Bottom of the oven. So somebody's Mudu Hanoa from his friend. Lo Yashilenu, he's not allowed to lend him, he's not allowed to lend him anything. In Hebrew and in Mishnah and Gemara terminology, in English we use the word lend for everything, whether you're lending things that are consumed, like money or food, or whether you lend things that are not meant to be consumed, but you return the original thing, like lending somebody your car. In Hebrew, you have two different words for those. She'ela is what you call borrowing something that you return, you're meant to return the original object.
Non-perishable.
And halakha is when you lend something that's meant to be used up and replaced, money or food. So lo yashilenu, he's not allowed to lend him objects. And who's not allowed to lend who? The Ran says it means that the one from whom the madir is also kavana is not allowed to lend anything to the madir, the one who made the neder, because that would be giving him hana. The layushalmenu, and he can't borrow from him. Actually, it's the other way around. Really, borrowing from him would be giving him hana. If Reuben is also kavana from Shimon, and then he goes borrow something from Shimon, then he's having hana from him. What we're saying is, though, actually, it's the other way around also, that Shimon is not allowed, that Reuben now is not going to be allowed to lend to Shimon either. Now, why will that? We'll talk about in the Gemara.
The Mudar is not allowed to have enough.
Well, so that's going to be the question. Why not? I mean, the Chorah, it seems to be a one-way thing. Why are we saying both ways? Yeah.
Mudar, I understand.
Yeah. Yeah. Similarly, Lo Yalvenu V'lo Yuvim Menu, he's not allowed to lend him money or food. V'lo Yuvim Menu, and he can't borrow from him. He can't sell to him, and he can't buy from him. Okay. So Gemara asks, in the wording of the Gemara over here, actually, there's two different girsas. The first, I guess, let's learn according to the girsa that we have here, and then we'll talk about the Ran has a different girsa. Yeah. Vishlam Lo Yalvenu, the Gemara starts off saying, I can understand that he's not allowed to lend him. Because then that's obvious to come Hanive. Then obviously, if Reuben is also tapping off from Shimon, and then he goes and borrows something from Shimon, the Madir is not allowed to lend the Mudir, right? So that's obvious. He's giving him enough. Ella lo yulva him enu mai kom Hanile. But why would borrowing from him? In what way would that be enough? And fine, we could even argue, maybe you could find a way where borrowing from him is hana, and therefore it should be aser, or buying from him would be hana. Namely, in the case of halva, you could argue what happens, for example, if you borrow worn coins, and you return newer coins. In those days, you know, it wasn't like nowadays where the value of a coin is stamped on it and that's that. In those days, it really depended on how much gold or silver or copper there was in the coin. So the more worn a coin, the less it's worth. So suppose that he borrows then worn coins and returns good ones. You could argue, okay, that's a certain hana. Similarly, as far as buying, you could argue. Now, you remember we learned about a week and a half ago or 2 weeks ago. We learned about the different kinds of buying and selling that a mudir and madir might do with each other. We talked about there's three possibilities. You have zvina charifa, something which flies off the shelf. You have the opposite of it, zvina de romi alape, something that is very difficult to sell. It's very difficult to find customers for. And then you have zvina metzia, an average, an in-between kind of thing. And we talked about then who gets the hana in each of those cases. So you could argue then that fine, our Mishnah is talking about, let's say this is how Tosafos and the Rosh explain it, that you could be talking about, let's say that we're talking about an average kind of object. So therefore, he's going to be getting hana from selling it. So therefore, you could argue that that's the, you could be doichik and say that that's why the Mishnah, when the Mishnah says that you can't lend the other guy money or you can't sell to him or buy from him, whatever, that would be talking about, for example, in the case of lending, because you may get better coins than you started with, and that's a hana, and in the case of selling, because you're selling a zvina matzia, where there's a certain hana from selling it. So the komitani minay. So then you could argue he's getting hana. Avol elo lo yishal himenu my komitani minay. But as far as borrowing objects from him, what kind of hana is there?
Borrow a cow and start making.
No, that's on point. The point, obviously, if Reuben is also to have hana from Shimon, obviously he can't borrow a cow from Shimon. That would be getting hana. Why can't Shimon borrow a cow from him? What kind of hana is that? Now, before we get to the answer, let's just talk about, as I said, the Ran has a different gusa over here in the Gemara. He starts off, Bishlem lo yuvim menu v'lo yikach menu v'lo yushal menu. He says that, to begin with, I can understand three out of the four cases in the Mishnah why you shouldn't be allowed to do them. You can't borrow the mudr can't borrow from the madir, because that would be giving hana. Similarly, I can understand why he can't buy from him and why he can't borrow objects from him. Now, the Ran, in particular, explains as far as the buying, he says differently than Tosfos and the Rosh said. Tosfos and Rosh both said that we're talking about over here, Zvina Metzia, that we're talking about an average kind of thing for sale, something that doesn't fly off the shelves, but something that doesn't sit there collecting dust for a long time either. And in that case, you could argue, the Gemara argues in the second part of its argument, that you could argue, fine, I can understand why there's a hana there. The Ran says differently. The Ran says, because the Mishnah is putting it together with borrowing objects or money, now in those cases there's no relevance of what kind of object it is. Borrowing is borrowing. Either way, you're getting a hana. Therefore, we should assume that actually the Mishnah is actually talking about a Zvina Charifa. It's talking about something that sells fast.
Zvina Metzia?
Well, it could be, you could argue it's a Zvina Metzia, but you could even argue that the Mishnah is talking about a Zvina Charifa, and that's why it puts it together with the other cases where it doesn't really matter. And the point would be, even a Zvina Charifa, even something that sells fast, then I can understand. So you can't buy from him, because then you're getting a hana, as we learned over there. But why shouldn't you be able to sell him a Zvina Charifa, for example?
You would also have an hana.
No, a Zvina Charifa, we said there that actually the seller doesn't really have so much of a hana from it. A Zvina Charifa, something that flies off the shelves. The seller doesn't really have much of a hana from it unless he gets a better price than he would have otherwise, because if you can't sell it to this guy, he'll sell it to somebody else. There's always customers available for it. We said they're not on the
contract. Very much in demand.
But that's not the point. The point is that therefore, so Zvina Charifa, it's the buyer who has the hana of it. That he's able to buy it before it sells out. With the Zvina Durami Alape, on the contrary, it was the seller who had the hana, because he finally gets it off his shelves. Zvina Metzia, we said both of them have. That's why we said over there, by Zvina Metzia, we talked about over there that you can't sell it for the exact price, you have to sell it at a discount.
Zvina Charifa is the buyer who would have more hana than the seller?
Yes.
Even if the seller can charge any price he wants, because
no, that's the thing. We said if he's able to charge more for it, then he is having the hana. But we were talking about where he does, but if he sells it at a discount, that's why we said he had to sell it at a discount.
Right. But who won't sell at a discount a product that's very much?
Well, but if he wants to be able to sell to this guy, then that's the only way he can do it.
It's very much in demand?
No, because otherwise he's also b'hana to him. No, obviously he can sell it to other people.
Being a Shabbana, you're saying,
again, I mean, we were talking even, we talked about there, not even the case where he's mudu hana from one single person. We talked about, for example, where he's mudu hana from the whole Jewish people, let's say. And then we said that he has no choice but to sell it at a discount because, So anyway, either way, according to either view, sir, the question is why shouldn't you be allowed to lend him something? And similarly with the other things. Actually, there's one more thing to mention about the question. The Ursameach has an explanation. He says that the Gemara starts off by asking about borrowing from him specifically, as opposed to the other cases, because lending somebody's money is a mitzvah. So therefore, you could argue, similar to what we had previously, that when you're doing something which is a mitzvah, and you have tzchut d'Rav Yosef, you have the benefit. We talk about that you have the benefit that you owe tzchut mitzvah at that time, that you have the tzchut d'Rav Yosef, that now at that time you're not obligated to give tzedakah. So that's why the Gemara started with that. B'shleim lo yalvenu v'kama hanilei, because we could argue that halva, more than any of the other things mentioned in the Mishnah, is a mitzvah, and you get tzchut d'Rav Yosef of it. Okay, you could be talking about where each one of them was nodir hana, one from the other. So it's not just a unilateral thing, it's a reciprocal thing. Well then, then neither one is allowed to lend to the other or sell to the other.
Why neither one? The one who...
Because if Reuben said, I'm mudir hana from Shimon, and Shimon said, I'm mudir hana from Reuben, that's what we're talking about.
Yes.
That's what we're talking about, yeah.
That's what Rabbi Chanina
is saying. That's what our Mishnah would be talking about. Now, in that case, the Ran asks, "What's the Kiddush?" Wouldn't it be fairly obvious? And the answer is because we learned back at the beginning of the Perek that the concept about Vitur Oster B'Mudah Hanah. We learned that Rabbi Eliezer had said that, and we learned those first couple of Mishnayos of the Perek went according to him that when you're Mudah Hanah, you're not even allowed to do Vitur, which is like normally, you know, you buy something and they throw in something extra, or they let you keep the change or whatever. It's called Vitur, or allowing them to step on your property or whatever. Even that kind of thing is Oster. No, because we're talking about we're not talking in the case of lending money. We're talking about, for example, you go and buy something at the store and it costs $1.98, and you give them it costs $1.98, and you give them $2 and you tell them keep the change, you know. That's Vitur. And he said that's also if in a case of Mudah Hanah. So our Mishnah is telling us the same thing again, that even though you would think maybe some of the things we're talking about in the Mishnah here are very minor hanas. You're borrowing somebody's cow for a short period of time, let's say. Nevertheless, that would still be offered.
Me too.
Yeah.
It would be
also both. So, well, it depends which one is also in the other. The point is, if Reuben is also to have anah from Shimon, then Shimon can't borrow Reuben's cow, and vice versa, then he can't. Then, yeah. So if it's reciprocal, if both of them are mudah anah, then neither one can lend to the other.
Because each one
is getting anah at their own time. If Reuben borrows Shimon's cow, at that time he's getting anah. If later on Shimon borrows Reuben's cow, that's also giving him anah. It doesn't cancel out. Abaya says, no. Theoretically, you could actually, for example, you can't borrow from the Mudah Hanah, but you could lend him. But we make Gzeira. You shouldn't do one because you may come to do the other. Similarly,
borrow in order not to lend?
Reuben, who is also to have anah from Shimon, is obviously not allowed to borrow anything from him. But Shimon, therefore, is also to borrow from Reuben because he may come instead to lend him later. And that would be awesome. And the same thing is Gzeira by all of them. Similarly with buying and selling, you're not allowed to buy from him as Zvina Harifa, that's a given. But you can't even sell as Zvina Harifa because you may come to you. So the Ran asks, what about, we learned in that whole sugya over there about the Zvina Harifa and all, we talked about that you can sell at a discount or you can buy at an inflated price or vice versa, as the case may be. So what's the difference over here?
Right.
He says the difference is because he brings from the Rambam and the Ramban that the difference is there he made a neder not to have anah from any of the Jewish people. So we don't want to burden him with now he's only going to have to do business with goyim, which in those times when Israel was mostly populated by Jews, it might have been very difficult to do that. Here, where he's only mudah anah from one person, go ahead and make that zera. So fine, he can't do business with that person at all. He can do business with everybody else. Yeah. Also, the Ram says another point is that we're going to learn in the next perek that there are cases where indeed only the mudr is also, but the madir is mudr. So what's the difference over here that we're making it bilateral, even if it was only a unilateral neder? The difference is the Ran says there we're talking about something that people think of as a real hana. Here we're talking about things like, for example, buying and selling. The average person doesn't think of that as a hana. So therefore, if you're allowed one, you may end up doing the other one, not realizing that it's considered hana. There we're talking about, for example, one of them giving the other one fruit or something. There it's very obvious that's hana, and people will know to be careful of that.
Buying and selling.
But buying and selling, and then lending and borrowing is not so obvious that would be. Okay. Next Mishnah. Amalai hashileni parascha. Reuben asks Shimon, lend me your cow. Amalai ena pnuya. So Shimon tells him, I'm sorry, it's not available right now. Omar, and Reuben says, koinam sadi shani chorish bala olam. A koinam on my field if I ever plow in it with it or in it. Now, what's the it? Does the it mean the cow or does the it mean the field? Most Mephoshim say that yes, it means the cow. In other words, he's saying effectively what he's trying to talk the other guy into lending him the cow. After all, look, if you don't lend me the cow now, then I'm making a neder that I will never again use your cow for my plowing.
Right.
Yeah. There are Mephoshim who say it means the field, but still, it effectively means the same thing. Not that he's saying I'll never plow this field again, but it means, in other words, I'm not going to plow it again. Yeah. So it depends. If usually he himself is the one who plows his field, who also b'cholad muterin? Well, then he's also because of the neder. But anybody else would be muter, because when he made the neder that I won't plow, he didn't mean me or anybody. He meant me, the one who usually does the plowing.
With this animal.
With this animal, that's what we're talking about. At some later time, he would be allowed to borrow that animal and have somebody else do the plowing for him. Yeah.
Or plow with another animal.
But if it's not the usual thing for him to plow, if usually he hires workers anyway, who v'chaladim asurim, then both he and everybody else are asur. Because then when he said she'eini chodeshba, we assume that he meant the normal way that my plowing is accomplished, which is that usually I have workers to do it. So therefore, everybody else would be also. The Rosh's Girsa is a little different. The Rosh's Girsa is that in that case, everybody else is also to plow it, but he himself is mutter. Because the logic is, since he himself doesn't normally do it, then he didn't mean to include that in his nether. Whereas the Girsa... Another din, the Mishnah continues, Hamudah Hanah Mechavera, if somebody is Mudah Hanah from somebody else, Ve'en Lo Mayochel, and now the one who's also to have Hanah does not have anything to eat. So the Madir, the one from whom he's also to have Hanah, can go to a storekeeper. The Omer, and he says, Ish plain in no dumi many hana, so and so made a neder not to have hana for me, the any day in my ass, and I don't know what to do. Well, who knows him, Loi? Now the storekeeper.
The mudr?
Well, the mudr, yeah, would be the one.
The mudr goes to the
storekeeper. Okay, so let's give him a name.
Right.
So Reuven made a neder not to have hana from Shimon.
But
Reuven in this case is the neder, he's the one making the neder, and then Shimon is the mudr, the object of the thing.
Right.
Now Reuven doesn't have anything to eat. Shimon therefore goes to Levi, the storekeeper, and says, "You know, what should I do? What should I do about Reuven? He has nothing to eat." But who knows him? So Levi goes and gives Reuven food. Later on he can go and take back the expenses from Shimon. Now, what the point is over here, like this. The Ram explains like this. First of all, when we talk about a chenveni, the pashtus has to be somebody who Shimon is a regular customer by, because otherwise, how is Levi going to trust him in the first place? Nevertheless, that's not considered that Levi is his shliach. If Levi was a shliach, it would be also, just like Reuven not allowed to have a nah from Shimon, he can't have a nah directly through Shimon's shliach. But like this, we don't say that the storekeeper Levi is considered the shliach.
What is he?
Effectively, therefore, he's doing it voluntarily, and therefore, when the Mishnah continues, but when the Mishnah continues, above the notes on Mizeh, it means if Shimon is willing, then he reimburses Levi. He actually is not obligated to, because he didn't specifically tell Levi, he didn't specifically make Levi a shliach to. he couldn't, exactly. So therefore Levi effectively did it voluntarily on his own, and therefore you can't obligate Shimon to pay him. Also, the Ran points out, we learned about this in Ksubas as well, that there can be another case too. There can be a case where instead of specifically going to Levi, where Shimon announces, Kol HaShemeya Kol Yozum, anybody who hears my voice, please go support Reuben. Same idea then, therefore, it's considered a certain extent of shlichus. We said the other day that Ran brought that that's considered shlichus to the extent, for example, that it's considered a valid debt if somebody does that. But it's not considered shlichus to the extent that it's not considered full shlichus to the extent that we would put Shimon actually on the hook for the payment to Levi.
Let me ask you a question. Can he tell his wife to go to tell Shimon's wife?
He can probably tell Shimon's wife. I suppose he can tell his wife, but how does that help? I mean,
his wife is considered like himself.
Yeah, okay, there's that. Okay, I don't know.
Without being a shepherd.
Right. No, but if he tells her, then that's shlichus. But if he's telling it to Reuben's wife, okay, I don't know. Question. I'm not sure. Okay. Another case, Hoya Beta Livnos, what if Reuben had a house that needed to be built? Bedeiro Livno, he had a fence that had to be put up. Sadeiro Livter, he had a field that had to be harvested. And the same idea now, Reuben has made a nether not to have enough from Shimon. But Shimon feels bad for Reuben. I still want to help him out. He needs workers. Same idea. And he doesn't have money. Same idea. Shimon can go to workers. So-and-so is mudr hana for me. I don't know what to do. Again, they go do the work for Reuben. And again, they are able to get their schar from Shimon if he's willing to.
What does this case add to the previous case?
The Ran says, the chiddush is that the first part of the Mishnah said that you're allowed to do this kind of thing even where it's a matter, you're allowed to do this thing when it's a matter of food, where otherwise the person pasha doesn't have anything to eat. The second part is telling us not only that, but even where it's something that's not so essential as food, just something like having a construction project that's not so urgent, l'chora, maybe we would say that we don't allow this kind of roundabout thing. Nevertheless, the Mishnah tells us that we do. How about another case? What if these two are going on the road? And again, the one who's mudr doesn't have, the one who's mudr hana doesn't have, the one who made the neder doesn't have anything to eat. Now, in this kind of case, then we don't say that Shimon can turn to Levi and say I don't know what to do, because then since it's the first, for one thing, since it's just the three of them together, then it makes it too obvious that it's a matter of shlichus. But there's also the fact, some of the Farshim say, not necessarily, it could just be, not necessarily is Levi, in this case, a friend of Shimon, who says he's going to trust him. So therefore, we have to have another alternative. What he should do is he should give the food to somebody else, to a third party, to Levi, as a present. And then Reuben is allowed to take that. Is allowed to take that food.
He gives
the food as a present to Levi.
Levi.
And then Reuben can go take it from Levi. Because Reuben is not also an anoff of Levi.
And there's no shlichus.
Right. Now, evidently, also, presumably, we would have to be talking, we talked yesterday about the issue of Nechasai versus Nechas in Elu,
right.
That there's a difference whether you say that the Issur is on my property or on this property. For Pashtus, we would have to be talking about that, he was saying Nechasai, that's my property. Actually, it's the other way around. Reuben would say it's your property that I'm also to have enough from. Otherwise, if he said this property, then it would presumably remain also, as we said yesterday in the Gemara, even after we gave it to Levi. What if there is no other person with them? Then what you do, what Shimon does, is he puts the food on a rock or on a fence. He says they're hefker for anybody who wants. And then Reuben can take it and eat it, so he's taking some hefker. However, for Rabbi Yossi Oyser, Rabbi Yossi says that's awesome.
Because?
We'll learn why in the Gemara. One thing is, by the way, what?
It's a hint.
Well,
he puts it on the rock.
No, but that's not the reason. The Gemara is going to give a different reason why Rabbi Yossi holds that. But one point is, Tosfos makes the point that we're only allowing, we see we're only allowing this because he has nothing to actually, Rosh says the same thing. We see we're only allowing this because he doesn't have anything else to eat. So the implication is that this kind of haroma, this kind of subterfuge, would be also when it comes to Nadarim in other cases. We only are master of it when Reuven has nothing to eat.
So how come Rabbi Yossi?
Rabbi Yossi answers, well, for reasons that we'll talk about in the Gemara. So let's learn the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, my time is Rabbi Yossi. What's Rabbi Yossi's reason that he says that this doesn't work? Kasavar hefker kamatana, because Rabbi Yossi holds that hefker is just like giving a present. Ma matana ad achim irushus nois and irushus matabel. Now, just like the present, if a person says, I'm going to give a present to Pliny, it doesn't actually take effect until Pliny actually does, until Pliny actually receives it. Sure. It does a kinyan on it, yeah. So until it actually leaves the rishus of the giver and comes into the rishus of the borrower, at hefker, at the ofil, rishus zeicha, so also with hefker, that it only becomes, it as long as the other person hasn't picked it up yet, it's sort of suspended. Just like in the case of matana, if I say I'm going to give you a present, at some time before that thing reaches you, I can change my mind. So it is also with hefker. If I declare something hefker, Rabbi Yossi is saying, that's how Rabbi Yochanan is understanding, that if I declare something hefker, until you actually pick it up, or somebody actually picks it up, I can take it back. Well, if I can take it back, then it means that up until the point when you pick it up, effectively you're taking it out of my rishus.
So when he says it's a matana and he puts it on the rock, nobody else can take it.
No. The mission didn't say he gives it as a matana. The mission had said that he gives it as a matana to the third party, to Levi. But if there's no third party, he said he doesn't give it as a matana. He makes it hefker.
Okay, so let's say he puts it hefker.
He makes it hefker, but the point is that Rabbi Yossi holds that it's not, in other words, what the Chachamim are saying, in other words, the Chachamim versus Rabbi Yossi are saying as follows. The Chachamim are saying, when you declare something hefker, the moment you declared it hefker, it left your rishus. At that point, it's in nobody's rishus. You're not allowed to change your mind.
Even if it's in your own?
If you've declared a hefker in your home, then it's not really hefker. We're talking about you put it on
the outside.
Yes.
And then you declare it hefker.
And you declare it hefker. So then it immediately becomes hefker. It immediately left your rishus. For good. And you can't change your mind. Now, you are able. You yourself can be zoche in it from hefker, but that's another matter. But the hefker took effect. You can't change your mind. So what happens? So you put it down. 5 minutes later, the other guy picks it up. During those 5 minutes, it didn't belong to anybody. It was in limbo. Well, then there was hefker. Well, therefore, that guy didn't take it from your rishus, so there's no problem. Whereas Rabbi Yossi is taking the view, even when you declare hefker, at that point, effectively, you could say the clock starts ticking, but the hefker status doesn't really take effect until the other guy picks it up. So there's no time in between, really, when it's hefker. You put it down, you declare hefker, it sort of, you could say quasi-hefker, maybe, I mean, you could still change your mind, until somebody actually picks it up. At that moment, he converts it from hefker into his own property. It means that whole time, since you were able to change your mind that whole time, means that whole time it was really considered to be yours all along.
So when you declared it,
well, the fact that you declared it hefker helps that somebody else now is able to pick it up and make a kinyan on it. But until that somebody does it, you can still change your mind, and therefore it's still considered yours.
But at the time the other one picked it up, it wasn't hefker anymore.
That's the point. As soon as he picks it up, then he made it. In other words, that's what Rabbi Yossi is saying. Rabbi Yossi is saying there's not three stages over here. Reuven's property, hefker, Shimon's property. There's really only two stages. Reuven's property, Shimon's property. The moment that Shimon picks it up, after a declaration of hefker by Reuven, at that point it leaves Reuven's rishus and comes into Shimon's rishus.
So there's no hefker.
The fact saying it's hefker has an effect, because otherwise if Shimon picks it up, nothing happens. But saying hefker doesn't have an effect right away. It has an effect only when somebody actually picks it up. Therefore, it comes out according to Rabbi Yossi. There was no in-between time there. There was no time when it's hefker. Therefore, it, effectively, Shimon is taking it directly from Reuven. Is taking it directly from Shimon. And he's moving on, so he can't.
There's never any time when it's hefker, according to the...
That's what we're saying. Right, exactly. Masiv Rav Abba, so Rav Abba asks, have a contradiction from a Braisa, which the Braisa expands on what the Mishnah is saying, that the Mishnah had said, that described the case that you put the food onto a rock or a fence or whatever, and then the other guy takes it. And the Braisa continues with the details. Amasai, when do I say that it doesn't work? If the neder came before the hefker. So on Monday I said that on Monday I said that so and so is also to have a null from my property. On Tuesday I declared some of that property hefker. Since it was already osir, since it was already usher, then therefore the fact that I declared it hefker doesn't matter, because again, according to the logic that we were just saying, there is no period in between that it's hefker. It was already, or actually, the Gemara is going to disprove that based on this. But the point is that if it was also first, the Isser doesn't go away just because it became Hefker. Avol im haya Hefker kodem l'nidre, but if the declaration of Hefker came before the Neder, if first I declared this and this stuff as Hefker, and then later on I said that anything I have is also to so-and-so, harei the mutter. Then Rabbi Yossi says, in that case, it would be mutter. Now, according to Rabbi Yochanan's logic, if anything you declare hefker is really still considered in your rishus until the other guy picks it up, mali nidra kodem lefkeri, my lefkeri kodem lenidra. So what's the difference? What came first and what came second? Either way, when you made the neder that so and so is also in all of your property, it includes anything which at that point is your property. So even you declared something hefker yesterday and nobody picked it up yet, it's still, according to this logic, it should still be considered your property. So it should until somebody picks it up. So it should be included in the issue. Why is Rabbi Yossi saying no? Okay. Who most of love who mishani law? So okay, Rav Abba asked the question, he also answered it. The logic is, you could argue that no, it's different. When a person makes a neder, he doesn't have in mind anything that he already declared hefker. So yes, you could argue, in other words, that you could argue that Rabbi Yochanan's Svara is still valid, that you would say anything declared hefker is still considered to be in your rishus until it's actually picked up. But you yourself, when you make the neder, don't have those things in mind. You, just like we mentioned before, that when you make a neder, there are various implicit and explicit exceptions to it. For example, we had in the case of Bikur Cholim that you never meant to include in the neder, something that affects the other person's life, various other things like that. So also, the one making the neder never meant to include anything that he had already previously declared hefker. So yes, that object is still his, but no, he had excluded it, just as much as if he had said that I'm only asking you from such and such an achasim of mine. So the theory is valid. You can understand.
That's for the bottom neder.
Masiv Rava. Rava says I have a different contradiction to this idea that you're talking about, that that there's no period of hefker in between, that the thing only takes effect when the person receives it. A Mishnah says in Bava Basra. Now, for background to this, now there's actually two different girsahs over here. Again, the Ran has one girsa, and all the other Rishonim have a different girsa. So again, first of all, do the girsa that we have here inside the Gemara,
which is the Ran.
Which is not the Ran. That's, you know what? That's one difference between the Dorei and most other Masechtos. Usually, throughout Shas, there'll be a lot of times when Rashi says I have the Chachigah Sinan, that this is the correct girsa, and generally speaking, the printers usually corrected the pnim of the Gemara according to what Rashi says. They didn't do that with the Ran. So therefore, they didn't do that with the Ran. So therefore, we have a lot of times throughout. That's one of the things that makes learning the Dorim a little more hairy is this fact that sometimes the version we have inside the Gemara. Okay. So for the version that we have inside the Gemara, the background is as follows. There's a concept we've talked about it before. I think we talked about it a good deal in Yevamos and in Ksubot. The concept called Matnas Shchivra, that the Chachamim made a takana that if a person is on his deathbed and he gives away his property, we say that it's considered valid. We don't need a kinyan for that.
We don't need competence.
Obviously, we don't need competence. Yeah, but it doesn't need a kinyan. And the reason for that was because shalosh tarif daitel. We don't want that the person should be able to die peacefully, basically knowing that what he wants will have been fulfilled. The law. No, Kenyan would be Kenyan Sudr or whatever it is, but we don't need any of that. Divrei Shchivra Ketzuvin V'Chim Esurin Damu is the rule, that the words of a Shchivra is considered, it's as if it was signed and sealed. Now, that's only talking about, though, now, there is a difference, though. So one thing of that also is it means, therefore, that if the Shchivra recovers from his illness, then he's not able to take it back. Because it's Ksuvin V'Chim Esurin, yeah. However, However, if to begin with he only gave away some of his property, then that's different. If he gave away some of his property, that means he is not expecting to die of he's not expecting to die of this illness. Otherwise, he would have given everything away. Therefore,
he expects when the chari expects to die himself, or when
basically the definition of shtiv merai is like he's not very close to death. It's not like his last moment. So shtiv merai just means, and the Rambam describes it basically like he's weak. He's not suffering from any particular illness, but he's just old age. That's a shtiv merai.
So.
I had that backwards actually. With a matnas shchiv merai, if he gave everything away, if he recovers, then he is able to take it back. Why? Because the whole reason why he gave it all away is because he expected he's going to die. Now that he recovered, we give him the chance to take that back. On the other hand, that's if he gave away everything. What if he only gave away part of his estate? Then we say that then that has the din similar to a matnas bari. It requires a kinyan in order to be effective, because then we don't give it the special din of matnas shchiv merai, because he himself obviously expects to recover
because he's only giving
part of it away. And therefore, since there was a kinyan involved, if he recovers, he can't take it back. Same way as a matnas bari. Same way as a healthy person who gives a matana and makes a kinyan about it can't take it back either. So now. The Mishnah says, "Miktsasim l'rishon b'raisa." Actually, "Miktsasim l'rishon v'kulam l'sheni." What if this shchiv merai said he started by saying, "Some of my property goes to plain, goes to person number one, v'kulam l'sheni," and then he says, "All of the property goes to the second person." Yeah. Well, so what does that mean? It means evidently that he changed his mind. It means that originally when he gave the estate to the first person, part of the estate, he intended to keep the rest of it for himself. So that was that's the equivalent of a matnas bari. But now he changed his mind, and decided to give everything to the second person. So the din is rishon kana. So rishon kana, sheni loy kana. The first one is kana. The first one is kind of the part that he was given. Sheni loy kana, where the second one is not kana. Why? Because the first one required a kinyan, and therefore because even if he recovered, he can't change his mind about it. It's the equivalent of matnas bari. The second one is a matnas shchiv merai, and a matnas shchiv merai he can take back when he recovers.
The first one he gave me tzatzin, so
that has the halacha.
He might have the whole pot.
No. But we. I mean,
if he gave some of it.
No, but that's the thing. It means that we're talking about over here with nimlach. So he gave some of it to the first person. Now he was changing his mind and trying to say, you know what? Forget about that. I want to give everything to the second guy.
Right. So he keeps it. He cannot change it.
But the second one,
the second one cannot have it.
No. So obviously he can't have everything. But we don't say.
Doesn't even have the rest.
No, that's the thing. He doesn't even have the rest, because otherwise, what would he have said? He would have said that such and such goes to the first person, and whatever's left goes to the second person. The fact that he says kuloi means effectively that he's changing his mind.
And we don't accept that.
And we don't accept that, because the first one was already kaina. Yeah. The point being that even though the first person may not have taken possession of it, yet nevertheless it's already considered his. It's considered a matana. Since you mentioned a neder, by the way, it's interesting. When we get into hefker tomorrow, we'll talk about it more. The Rambam holds that the whole concept why hefker is effective just by declaration is because hefker is a type of neder.
Only for the Rambam.
Right.
All the other farshim.
Everybody else says that hefker is just. Hefker. Yeah, but the Rambam writes that it's
logical.
Okay. Anyway, but we're not talking about hefker. We're talking about matana. So the idea is that once he said to the first person that the second one is not able to be koina, so therefore you see that just No, so, okay, so then the question would be rather like this. We were just trying to say, according to Rabbi Yossi, that there's a difference between what you were already maskir and what you hadn't been maskir yet. We want to argue that what you were already maskir, you never meant to include in your nether. But we see from this case over here that when you say to the second one, kulam l'sheni, you mean to include everything that you already gave to the first one, even though l'chora you already gave it away, and because of that, the second one can't take effect because it's a matnas shchiv merah, and then you recovered.
What do you mean, kulam? Everything except?
No, because then he would have said so. Then he said, then he would have said, v'ashar l'sheni. And if you said v'ashar l'sheni, that's different. Yeah. Okay, so all that is the girsa that Tosfos and the Rosh have in this. The Ran has a different girsa in the Braisa. Miktsasim l'rishin v'kulo l'sheni, sheni zocha l'ishtabit v'rishin. We're talking about a different case over here. Not necessarily talking about a case of shchiv merah, but just a case. A person has two slaves, two avadim k'nanim. Now what he does is, he first writes out that he's giving some of his nechassim to the first one. Miktsas l'rishin. V'kulon l'sheni. Later on, he says, I'm giving all of them to the second one. Not necessarily. According to the Ran. Yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to be. Yeah. Now, the thing is like this. An Eved is not able to be coming there. Kol mashakona Eved kona rabo. You have the famous story. What? You have the famous story in the Medrash.
He
gave all his goods to Yitzchak. Yeah, it doesn't say anything about that. I mean, the fact is in halacha you have the rule mashakana eved kona rabba. Anything that a slave acquires, automatically his master acquires. That's the famous story in the Medrash about a father who dies, his son is at a faraway place, looming Torah or whatever. The father has a slave over there, and he knows if he writes out a will that everything goes to his son, then the slave is going to take everything and run away. So he says that everything goes to the slave except for my son has the right to choose one thing. And when the son comes back, Akitzer, he consults with the Chachamim, and they advise him, your one thing you should pick is the slave. And then Mashakana Eved Kana Rabba, then automatically everything belongs to you. Yeah. So over here you have the same kind of thing. He said that some of the nechassim belong to the first slave. Some of the nechassim, though, means not all of them. That means some of them still belong to the master. Well, part of that something that belongs to the master may well be the first slave. If he himself is not considered part of the gift, then he himself can't acquire any part of it. Later on, the master then says that I'm giving everything to the second slave. Well, by giving him everything, automatically he becomes free because it means that he himself now doesn't have an owner anymore. Well, therefore, he also has the right to keep the first one as a slave.
If he gave everything to the second one
later, because the second one, having gotten everything, is automatically free by that. And therefore, part of the everything includes the first slave, who the first slave himself was not able to be koneh himself because there was still a shear, there was still something left over in the estate that wasn't given to him.
That's what we're saying, effectively.
Sheni zochel l'shtabed berishin. The second one has the schus to use the first one as an eved. So again, the question...
Because he said kulam
to the second one. So again, the question amounts to the same thing, sort of, that we were trying to distinguish between something that you were already maskir versus something you weren't maskir yet, and say that your nether applies to one and not to the other, but we see from this that when you say that you're giving everything to the second Eved, it means you mean everything, you're including even what you already said you're giving to the first Eved. Same idea as with the Shchid Merah, according to our Gersa in the Gemara. Either way, the point is when you say kulon, then you are including everything that's there, both what was already given away as well as what hadn't been given away yet. How can you tell me then that Rabbi Yossi would now that Braisa, the Stam Braisa, apparently Rabbi Yossi wouldn't argue with it. So how could you tell me then that Rabbi Yossi would distinguish, as Rabbi Abba wants to argue, between something that you were maskir already and something that you weren't maskir yet, and say that your nether applies to one and not the other?
If the case of the Eved translates to the case...
Well, that's what we're assuming it does, or the case of the Shchid Merah translates it. Either way, yeah. Ella Omar Rava. No, Tainu Taima did Rabbi Yossi. No, you want to know what Rabbi Yossi's reason why he says in our Mishnah that declaring it Hefker doesn't help? It's true, theoretically it should work, but we make a Zeta because of the case of the gift of Beis Chorin. We mentioned it briefly in Pesukos, but the actual story is like this. Somebody was mudr hana from somebody else. Here's the actual case. Beis Chorin was the name of the place. It's a city in Eretz Yisrael where the story took place. The father was also to have hana from the son. The father had made a neder not to have hana from his son. Later on, the son is marrying off his own son. So you've got a grandfather, a son, and a grandson, three generations. So the son, let's give him names, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Avraham was also to have hana from Yitzchak. Yitzchak is marrying off Yaakov. So Yitzchak goes to Lavan and says to him that, I want to be able to have my father invited to the wedding, but he's not allowed to have hana from me. What do I do? He says to Lavan, I'm giving you the courtyard and the whole Suda as a present.
Who says?
Yitzchak says, I'm giving you the wedding hall and the Suda, in order that Avraham, my father, should be able to come to the
does
Suda.
It work? I mean,
well, Lavan turns around and says, you know what? If everything belongs to me, then you know what? Then I'd like to give it all away to Hektish. Mine, I can do whatever I want with it. I want to give it to Hektish. So Yitzchak tells him, look, I mean, I didn't give it to you for that purpose. I gave it to you for the purpose that I didn't give it to you in order to make it Hektish. So Lavan says, yeah, you know what? I mean, so what are you trying to do? You're trying to, you want to evade your neder and make your father be able to come to the wedding, and I'm going to be the one in trouble that I'm the one who facilitated you breaking your neder. The point is, therefore, that at the end of that mission, the Chachamim say that yes, a matana has to be the kind where the other person has the ability to give it away as hekdesh. Otherwise, it's not considered a matana. So, because of that, and we're going
to
have
hekdesh or anything
he
wants to do with it.
Well, specifically, we're talking about hekdesh. Yeah, I mean, we'll have to deal with then how this fits with the idea that this type of thing as matana amanas lahaster, that you have a you can give somebody something as a present on condition that they return it, as we do every circus with our lulav and esrog.
Right.
So we'll have to deal with that then. But we'll deal with that in a few days, as Hashem. But anyway, the Gemara is going to off and on over the next.
I'm not going to it includes hekdesh. He wants to give it. No, they cannot include it. He cannot give it to hekdesh.
That
if he has to return.
Lahora, but we'll have to deal with how that fits with this. But then we'll get to that. Right now, that's not really relevant. But the point is this mitzvah of Beis Chorin, the Gemara is going to quote at various places in this perek and in the next perek to illustrate this idea then that. You have now something like that where your Yitzchak actually went and said in so many words, you know, I'm only giving this to you as a present in order to be able to have my father invited to the wedding. So that kind of thing, where it's a very transparent harama about that, we have a problem. We want to make sure such a thing doesn't happen. So that would be the argument then, Rava is saying that Rabbi Yossi in our Mishnah doesn't want to allow Shimon to declare his food hefker in order for Reuben to take it, because that's too much like matnas beis chorin. It's too much like this case where you're doing it only for the purpose of evading your neder.
And therefore breaking your
neder. And evading and breaking your neder, yeah. And Rabbi Yossi doesn't want to allow that. So
no.
Not because whether Hefker takes effect on what he already owns or what he doesn't own, but rather as a Zeta in order to avoid this kind of thing.